Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sure, that much like we've talked about Peyton Manning and Jeff Saturday over the years, now you know that Patrick Mahomes and Creed Humphrey, those two are linked forever, and they are going to be together for 10 plus years.
Part of why this works, and I understand it looks like a big jump, it's actually more like $3.5 million, because Jason Kelce would have slotted above Ragnow based on average annual in the final year of his deal, but still below Creed by a wide margin. I think there's people a little bit worried about the money, because 4 for 72 and $18.5 million seems like a lot. It's still the lowest paid position on the entire offensive line by the position. $21 million, $20.5 million is still the next lowest, and that's at guard. So it's still the lowest paid position on the offensive line from average annual in the entire NFL. I still don't think you're overpaying based on that price. And I think that what people are missing in this is, this is a result of what has happened, a culmination of the entire offseason. If you're wondering why there seems to be a higher than average number of people holding out, reworking contracts, restructuring deals like Travis Kelce, where they just like give you raises for no reason, it's because the cap has gotten so much bigger over the last couple of years. The veteran salaries haven't caught up. So I think every contract we see over the next couple of years at any position is going to see that little juice bump. And that's what happened with Creed here.
Well, I think we'll continue to see any of these new mega deals will make them the highest paid, you know, blank, whatever their position is. But the gap, this one was more unique to me because of the age difference. There wasn't as much
there wasn't as much
to mirror. You know, as I said, that the next center that's anywhere near Creed's level is 28. Creed is 3 years younger, and he's the Super Bowl champion multiple times. So I don't think there was a direct comp. And credit to his agent, I guess, for being able to not only get him the deal, but also reset the market. What I wonder now, though, is because this was an offseason so far, Cody, they have chosen to pay their kicker to a long-term deal and make him the highest-paid kicker in NFL history. They have chosen to make their center the highest-paid center in the NFL. So based off of positional value, that's where they've prioritized over linebacker Nick Bolton, over right guard Trey Smith. And I know back in March, the question everybody had was, okay, these are the three guys that are next up.
Yep.
Who gets paid? And I guess four if we include Butker. But four, who gets paid? And they've said two of them are. They can't pay all three or all four, I guess. And they've paid two. And I'll stand by what we said about Nick Bolton the minute we saw that interview that he did for, I think it was the 33rd team, or maybe the Draft Network, I'm sorry, where he acknowledged like he doesn't want to even talk new deal till after the season. That was the sign that we knew that there was no way they were getting a deal done, and that he knew that the dollar amount was off, versus Creed Humphrey was just kind of quiet about the whole thing. That meant he knew and was confident this thing was happening. So is there another deal that's happening before we get to the start of the season in 13 days?
I mean, it's maybe. Like, I don't want to say for sure or be too pressed on that. If there's a deal to be done, it's Trey. Nick Bolton's deal is not getting done. Because I saw a lot of people be like, well, this means no Trey Smith and no Nick Bolton. I was like, not necessarily.
I think there's a good chance that's true, though.
No Nick Bolton, I think, is the case anyway. They had already made their decision on that, just the way he was talking about it, you right, in that interview. Did not sound like a guy who thought he was getting a second contract in Kansas City. Trey Smith, I will always make the argument until I'm proven otherwise wrong. You can technically structure his deal in a way that his money doesn't start kicking in until Joe Tooney's gone. Now, look, does that create a vacuum at left tack or left guard? Sure. That's the way the NFL works, right? Trey Smith's quite a bit younger. Joe Tooney's a little older, so maybe you just like, going to lock up right guard and time to figure out left guard.
Well, that's
now.
Why they've been drafting some offensive linemen here recently. They're going to have to continue to do that.
Yeah, and so that kind of creates that void. What I think this means is no Nick Bolton and probably no Justin Reed. And again, they've already started drafting at those positions. Between Leo Chanel and a few others, they have tried to start covering themselves there as well. I guess if a deal got done, it would be Trey, but I don't think there's any more deal to be done.
So I agree with you that Justin Reed's probably not on this team next year. I don't know if the Creed Humphrey deal is why, though. I mean, I think Justin Reed, at some point we've seen just when a player hits a certain age, they're willing to move on at that position, a la Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah.
And then, to your point as well, look where they've drafted. You know, they've
Hicks, Connor.
We're going to talk about Jayden Hicks. We're going to talk about Jayden Hicks later because every single one of these preseason games, that dude has stood out on the television screen. It's been nuts. So we'll give Jayden Hicks some love a little bit later on in the show. I'm with you where I don't think they get another deal done. The only reason why I ask the question is in the next 13 days, do you think somebody else gets a deal, Trey Smith or Nick Bolton? And really, we're asking about Trey Smith as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Is last night during the broadcast, and it was on NFL Network out here. It wasn't blacked out local. Like it was back in KC, Brett Veach was being interviewed by Trent Green and Ari Wolf, and they asked him, "Hey, is this, you know, excited to get this deal done?" And Brett Veach made the comment like, "Oh no, it kind of clears the way for us to kind of look at some of our other young guys." Now, he wasn't talking about evaluating the other young players in the preseason. That was in reference to the question about Creed Humphrey's deal getting done. And so I took that as like, okay, Creed's out of the way now. We got his deal. Now maybe we can see what we can do potentially for Trey Smith.
Like we
Nick
got
Bolton.
10 days. Maybe there is time to get another deal done.
That's how I viewed it.
Well, we know that that's how they do their deals because that's exactly what happened with Chris Jones and other contracts last year. When all these, it was like, hey, are they going to get another deal? No. They're not messing with a single contract until they figure out Chris Jones's deal. Once they figure that out, then they'll get to the other people on this list. And I think that that's probably how they handled the Creed Humphrey deal.
Yeah, Trey Smith's the only potential player that could get another deal before the start of the season. But when
guard money's getting out of control.
When Quinn Meyers got a deal with the Broncos a month or two ago, whenever that was, and became the third highest paid guard in the NFL, I think that told us already, and Trey Smith's better than him.
Yeah.
So you know the benchmark. I don't know how realistic it is that Trey Smith gets the deal done, period, let alone before the start of the season. And that's the challenge that they had. I know Bob on his show this morning with Dusty said that, according to a source of his, that the Chiefs do want to sign Trey Smith, but acknowledging it's going to be challenging and difficult. I think that is because the Quinn Meyers deal that was in Denver and the kind of money that he actually got. So we'll get back to the Chiefs in the preseason game a little bit and who I think continues to stand out in all three of these preseason games. But let's talk some Royals baseball. They are about to begin a crucial 20-game stretch, maybe the toughest 20-game stretch of anybody in baseball, beginning with the Philadelphia Phillies. And to talk some more baseball, we're excited to have Cody Decker from Mad Dog Sports Radio, obviously former big leaguer. Well, you're on BetQL. I see you on FS1. You're everywhere, man. What's going on?
I'm everywhere and nowhere. It's awesome. Love it. Love that about me.
How's Vegas?
Dude, Vegas is great. Oh, I love coming to Vegas. Any chance I get the opportunity, especially specifically here to Circa. Like, I've known Derek Stevens for years. And, you know, I got to know him as a minor leaguer when he used to own the 51s. And I used to come into town and beat the hell out of the 51s. And he didn't like that. So one night he tried to get me really drunk. And thinking that he was going to somehow mess me up, I went like 4-for-4 the next day. And then we've been friends ever since. And so, you know, getting to see what he's done to downtown Vegas and everything here, man, I just love it here.
It's changed a lot.
Crazy.
This area changed a lot.
Oh, crazy,
in the
right?
Last 15 years.
Like, I'm not a strip guy. You can't get me to go to the strip all that often. But downtown Old Vegas, oh, man, you're screaming my language, people.
I saw, so, like, it seemed like on your show, you and Michelle was running down during breaks to do the slot machine. And then our show ended, and you guys were definitely done. And I still saw her at the slot machine. I think she might just genuinely be a slots player.
So this is going to be a topic on the show today. Michelle has a problem. And I didn't know how serious the problem was. Every single break yesterday, she went down to the slots. Four floors, by the way. We have a four-minute commercial break, and she's running down playing the slots. Comes. By the way, during our show, she made $200. The night before, she made $2,000.
Whoa.
Last night, she was up another couple of grand. Our show ended at noon here on the west side. Well, you know, not when on the west coast, but you know, Pacific Coast time. 10 p.m. is when I found her at the slots last night.
Again? I saw her.
I will admit, I know of an hour break she took because I was able to convince her to go to dinner with me and our producers. I'm like, all right, get up. We are going to dinner. We went to Barry's Steakhouse downstairs.
Oh, place is great.
And then I went down to meet up with all the people at the Radio Row thing, and Michelle went back to the blackjack table where I found her because we were playing blackjack for about an hour before we went to dinner because she took a break from the slots. And now,
to play a different game.
And then at 10 p.m., I come back. I'm like, and I start hunting around. I'm like, is it possible Michelle is still playing the slot? Found her exactly at the slot machine she's been playing. And she was like, dude, I'm winning. I'm like, in her eyes.
She's up a couple grand.
She has made my salary. And I don't understand how the rich keep getting richer. It's just it's horrific.
Yeah,
it's just how it works.
I need that money. She does not.
Oh. Well, what about the Royals? Since at least that's the case. Look, there's no real way to transition from that, other than Michelle has a problem, and we'll get her help.
We're going to tell. Oh no, she's going down to the slot machine between every section today.
Because the last time we had you on the show was at Radio Row in Vegas, and that day we were like, the only way we're not talking Chiefs is if Bobby Witt Jr. gets an extension. That day
he
got an extension that day, and we're like, oh, this sets up the future, and we like what they're doing in the offseason.
We didn't think the future would be this year.
I will freely admit, neither did I, and I'm thrilled to have been wrong about that.
What do you mean? How? We know they're real. I mean, we're in August here. There's no question. Are they real or anything like that? There's nothing fluky. But when you've watched them play, what stands out the most? And do you believe this team ultimately does make the postseason?
I think they're going to make the postseason. It's going to be a battle, as you mentioned, the gauntlet that they got. They got the Twins coming up. They got the Yankees coming up. They got the Phillies right now. They got the Guardians twice. And you know, as much as we've been sitting here criminally under discussing the Royals, I apologize, Kansas City, for saying this. We've also criminally under-discussed how good the Guardians have been this year. I mean, in a national talking point, they are not discussed at all. At least the Royals have a star in Bobby Witt Jr. Like, if I go around Vegas right now, name a player on the Guardians, they won't know the
They'll
Guardians
say
are a baseball.
Bieber, who's been out for the entire
They will
year.
Say, who are the Guardians?
Wow, there
they
you
will
go,
say. Yeah. I mean, that's what their first thing's. It's just, it's wild. And this team, it's actually the Bobby Witts of the world, obviously having an unbelievable year, but it's everyone around him. I mean, MJ Melendez is, you know, hitting just above 200, but he's got what, 18 home runs, or you know, Renfro's got 11 bombs. You know, obviously everything Salvi's doing right now, he's got 22 home runs, hitting 275 roughly.
Yeah,
Everybody's pulling their weight, and everybody's playing good. Just honestly, everybody's just playing solid baseball. And that's a much more difficult thing to ask of a full team than you think. I mean, the White Sox, they're easy to punch down to right now. But that is a team of Major League Baseball players. Like, they are not bad baseball players. They're playing awful this season, historically awful. But their talent level is not that much beneath everyone else in this league. It's just, that's baseball. Baseball's wild this way. And the Royals, man, I am loving everything I'm saying. And we saw it last year. You just need to get in. We had a World Series last year with the Diamondbacks and the Texas
that's
Rangers.
That's what we've been saying. I mean,
we all remember
2014 in Kansas City, of course, and just get in the dance with the starting pitching that they have.
Exactly.
Where are you at on Lugo? Because people are concerned in Kansas City right now. He's pitching at all-star level.
Yeah.
He's had some issues here recently, career high in innings.
Yes.
That's a real thing.
It's a real thing, and he's had a lot of injury history over the last several years, and he hasn't had this success since he was with the Mets maybe 5 years ago. So I am worried about the innings that he's thrown just because of the injury factor and the age of it. But, man, if he keeps going out there and doing what he's been doing, I mean, there is no reason. Let's not sit here and pretend that the 2015 Royals was the offensive juggernaut in the history of baseball. It simply was not.
No, they were a good offense.
They were a solid offense, but their pitching was borderline God tier. And because of that pitching, they won a World Series. It's honestly the reason why I'm so disappointed in the Seattle Mariners. The Seattle Mariners should be the 2015 Royals, but somehow they can't even put together a decent offense.
In fairness, like in 2014, that was when Ned almost got fired, reportedly, and then he found a way to turn it around. Scott Service went the other way.
Yeah, and then
after the All-Star break,
and in 2016,
he got himself fired instead.
In 2016, I was there when Ned broke his hand in spring training. That was weird.
Ned's such a look, I covered the team full time. I think I covered you in spring training probably in that year.
That
I used
fun.
To go down to spring training during that time. Ned's just when he fell out of a tree, and then there's this whole Ned almost died in a field stuff, and then the bees, and then the moon stuff.
It's
He's got a million stories.
It's not that he broke his hand. It was how he broke his hand. It was wild. They brought in like this motivational speaker.
Yeah,
who was
karate
just,
chopping
who
stuff
was,
or whatever.
No, I wish that I was joking. That's what this man was doing. Yeah. This man was like ripping phone books. He's like, if you believe I can rip this phone book, I believe you guys can win another World Series. He rips the phone book. And there was like, yeah. I'm like, what is happening? Like, this is nuts. And then they bring Ned up and they're like, if you believe your manager could punch through this brick, it was like five bricks, like that scene at the end of the karate tournament at Sidekick. It was really weird. And he punched through the brick and we're like, and I just kept asking, why is any of this happening?
What's going on?
And Ned broke his hand on the brick. But he broke the brick.
But he broke the brick, so he gets the win.
Didn't make the playoffs that season.
No, but they were a decent team.
They were a decent team. I got traded 2 weeks into the season. I'm just bitter.
So let me ask the question about like all the players and stuff you've been around, because there was a really good story last night. I don't know if you saw this. You've been around Salvador Perez because you run all those spring trainings.
What a guy.
Last night, he saw kids playing wiffle ball in a neighborhood and then just stopped and played with them for an hour.
That's my guy.
I feel like he's just one of those guys that be like, he loves baseball so much, you have to drag him away from this sport in a way very few guys have to be drug away from it.
There just aren't enough Salvies in baseball. Like, Salvi was that guy when I was – I mean, I was only with the team for, what, 2 months in spring training, and then I broke camp with the team technically, and then they informed me when I got to Kansas City that I'm going to Omaha.
Oh,
really fun feeling that was. But
That's
it was
a tough one.
No, don't worry. But here's the thing. Salvi was – even though I was only around him for 2 months, like, that's just who he was. He carries himself. He's a different guy. He just carries himself differently. He walks around. You can't help but follow this guy. If he wants to be a manager tomorrow, he will be a manager tomorrow. Like, he commands that much respect. And man, that's awesome to hear that. That's so cool. I dig that.
We're talking to Cody Decker from Mad Dog Sports Radio here from Circa Resort and Casino Ultimate Contest Weekend. Salvador Perez, while we're talking about him, if he gets in the postseason, does that get him over the hump to get in the Hall of Fame? We've said he needs more postseason moments for some people, I think, out there. You know, because right now, I think he should get in, but at the same time, I also recognize that I believe he needs to play at this level for another couple of years.
It's
going to
be close.
Some postseason experience.
Like, I don't think he's going to be a first balloter, but I think he's going to be a guy that will eventually get in the Hall of Fame. Like, right now, everybody's having the argument about Joey Votto. Joey Votto is a Hall of Famer. Period. Stop. There's no question about it. In my opinion, he's the first ballot Hall of Famer. But the fact that we're even arguing about that makes me go like, all right, Salvi's going to take a couple of years, even though I firmly believe he will be a Hall of Famer.
I think that like being with one team really does help him, because people are just going to like that feeling. Like, look at this guy. Stuck it out the whole time.
Yeah.
One franchise since he was 16 years old. That's going to help him.
There's something weirdly nostalgic about it. It's a throwback. Nobody plays for one team anymore, especially a team. And I mean, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn by saying especially a team that does not have the history of spending money the way the Royals have, even though modern day is seemingly a different case. But man, it's very cool to see. Keep in mind just the amount of names that have played with the Royals, especially through those years. I mean, Eric Hosmer played for a few more teams. Moustakas played for like five more teams. Like,
Kane played for at least one more.
Yeah, they had a core group of guys. Only one stayed throughout the entire thing. And you can make the argument that Salvi's like now played for four different generations of the Kansas City Royals, it seems like.
He played for the original bad Royals, the World Series run Royals, the second bad run Royals, and now the Bobby Witt Jr.
It's incredible. So. Like, truly, who has got this type of longevity these days?
Honestly, he's getting better. That's what's
especially
confusing me.
The other thing, it's also the guy's a catcher. His body should not – he shouldn't be able to walk right now at this point. And the guy has got the fountain of youth. Also, his size, like a guy that big that catches, and catches that well, by the way. Salvador Perez, love you. Please never stop playing baseball.
Cody, before we let you go real quick, just you said you think they make the postseason.
I do.
Who do they not want to see if it's a wild card round and they got to go on the road, even though – in a best of three series, I do like the Royals' rotation against anybody in that spot. But who do you want to avoid? Do you think?
No, it depends on who they're going to be set up with. I'm okay with them being set up with whoever has a bye. I think if they meet up with, what I don't want to see them happen is like them meeting up against the Astros. It doesn't mean I don't think they can beat the Astros. I do think they can beat the Astros. I think they're better than the Astros. I don't think the Astros are particularly a great team this year. But October, we'll see what happens. I like the idea of them facing somebody with the bye, because I firmly think that the bye is punishment for the best teams in Major League Baseball. Who's come out of 5 days off and just swung the bats like they know what they're doing? No one. It's been an Achilles heel for the Dodgers. It's been an Achilles heel for the Phillies, the Yankees. I think the Yankees need to finish second place so they don't have to deal with the bye. I think that momentum for an offensively minded team like that is going to be huge. If they can face one of those, if they end up facing the Yankees with the bye, I think it's the best possible scenario for the Kansas City Royals.
Cody Decker, Mad Dog Sports Radio. Appreciate you stopping by, man. Enjoy the rest of the time in Vegas.
Oh, I got to pull Michelle off a machine right now so we can actually do the show.
Do you think if I was up a couple grand, Cody, would you let me just stay down there for a little bit?
I just want a piece of your action.
Like, deal.
You know, like, just give me a piece of the action. And then, keep heading down.
Make the argument. I gave him the chips. That should be half my money.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Exactly.
All right. I'm allowing this to happen.
You're welcome.
Coming up next here on 96.5 The Fan. We'll talk some more Royals baseball. I want to dive a little bit deeper in the next 20 games. What's that record looking like in 20 games? That's next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cody and Gold. Back here on Cody and Gold Live in Las Vegas. And yes, Cody, Shania Twain is performing in Vegas. Thank you, Drew, for that. Drew back in KC making sure we stay on the air, putting together today's show. Thanks again to Cody Decker from Mad Dog Sports Radio for joining us to talk some Royals baseball. We'll get right back to the Royals in this upcoming 20-game stretch in just a little bit. But we are at Circa in Las Vegas, an unbelievable resort. It is sports heaven if you're trying to take in any sporting event, whether it's at the world's largest sports book inside the casino or you go upstairs a few flights. Remember I told you it's like the world's largest escalator, man. That steep escalator ride,
you gotta look down, don't you?
Yeah, I gotta look straight up, man. I gotta look straight up, no looking down. But then you get to a 143-foot screen outside with six pools. We're gonna be hanging out there after the show today. It's for contest weekend. You could join the Circa Millions or the Circa Survivor contest. Combined $16 million guaranteed. You can come out to Vegas before the start of the season to sign up for that. We'll talk to Derek Stevens, owner of Circa, a little bit later on in the show. But I told you yesterday when we got off the air that you needed to try the brisket fried rice. You're like, Gold, stop mentioning the damn brisket.
Everyone
fried rice.
Kept mentioning it. I just felt like it was a big sell.
So we went to 8 East, which is the name of a restaurant here inside the casino. We both ordered the brisket fried rice, and it was everything that I remembered, man. It was everything I remembered. Now, what did you think? We put out the video on the review.
We did? I thought I was cut a little bit short. Felt like I could have given
a 20-minute video.
A more proper review with some more detailed answers to my taste test. I thought it was very good. I don't have any notes at the moment. I'm not like moved to tears or anything by the dish,
but
like,
it's damn good.
Very good. Certainly would eat it again, although, you know me, if I went back, I'd probably just get like a different dish.
Fair enough.
To you know, move through the menu a little bit, but I thought it was very good. I you know, like, I wasn't like, as much as it was oversold, it would have been easy for it to be like, this is kind of disappointing. And it was not that. It was a very good dish. So if you come here, you're not going to be disappointed with the brisket fried rice.
Yeah, when you come out of here in October, we're going to be out here in October, Chiefs Raiders weekend. We're going to be hanging out. We're going to be hosting a party. Join us out here. There's many, many great things to do at Circa. You don't have to leave the property. Cody and I have only left the property for 5 minutes because their sister property had a little happy hour thing last night with some other radio stations. Otherwise, we have stayed in one spot. There's no reason to go anywhere else when you come to Las Vegas and join us in October, whether you're going to the game or not. That's the thing. Like, even if you're not going to the game on that Sunday against the Raiders when the Chiefs are just going to kick their ass after everything has happened, just hang out.
It's Vegas. We also will have game tickets to give away.
That is true.
That Friday during the party. So if you're thinking, well, I'm going to come anyway, maybe I'll end up at the game because those Vegas prices can be kind of steep for those games against, you know, over at the stadium. So, you know, we'll see, but we should have game tickets available to you. I don't know how we're going to give them away yet, but we'll figure that out.
You have to be at that party. I know that.
Yes, sir.
I know you'll have to be at the party, so join us in October at Circa. All right, let's get back to the Royals. We talked about this with Cody a little bit, Cody Decker. The next 20 games is as tough of a stretch as you'll ever see in baseball, because it's one thing if you have this same type of lineup in April. Nobody knows how good everybody is yet. We know how good the Phillies are. We know how good the Astros are. We know how good the Twins are. We know how good the Guardians are. The Yankees. Like, these are all teams we know. They're all playoff teams, and you get to play them all in a row. Congratulations, Royals.
Like,
it all
one.
Starts tonight at Kauffman Stadium against the Phillies.
Like, literally every single team that matters in baseball is on the Royals schedule. So here's where they rank, by the way, as far as major league ranks for where they stand. So all 30 teams. The Yankees have the second-best record. The Phillies have the third. The Guardians have the fourth. The Twins are tied with the Royals around ninth. And the Astros are a couple spots behind them at 12th. So, I mean, you will face five of the 12 best teams in baseball over this stretch. And this might sound overconfident, but having seen the Royals for some stretch and then watching what they're doing to pitching, I actually think they'll be 10-10 in the next 20 games, which I'll take. Like, I understand that for the division purposes, that's going to be tough unless, you know, five of those 10 wins are against the Guardians. But 10-10 is what I honestly think they'll be during that stretch. And something that has stood out to me is I still think we're underselling this Royals rotation. Do you know right now, based on major league ranks, of pitchers of at least 120 innings pitched, where the Royals pitchers rank in ERA?
They're all in the top 20, right?
Four in the top 12. They have four of the best 12 ERAs in the entire sport, all five in the top 20, including Michael Lorenzen. So that's their current rotation. Five of the 20 best ERAs in the sport out of the starting rotation, four of the best 12 ERAs in the sport. That has got to count for something in here. Traveling to New York's going to be tough. Traveling to Houston's going to be tough. Those ballparks will make pitching matter less. But we also just saw what they did in Cincinnati when they got their turn in a home run park. Bobby Wood Jr. started plugging home runs left and right, and so did the entire damn order. Vinny was putting it out. Bobby was putting it out. I think that they can hang with all these teams. I'm kind of hoping for, and what I think they'll be is 10-10.
So I think if you believe they're going to have a winning 20-game stretch, above 500 20-game stretch, that means you have to include them winning this series against the Phillies this weekend.
I believe
because
so.
Because it's at Kauffman. That's the biggest
Taiwan part. Walker's in game one, and that's a massive pitching advantage for you.
Correct. The Royals are big-time favorites here at Circa if you go and bet on this game. They're pretty considerable favorites, I should say, with Michael Walker on the bump. But if you think they're going to finish with, go 12-8 or something like that and be that successful during this 20-game stretch, and I'm not sold necessarily that includes them winning the series against the Phillies. I can't see them losing the series against the Phillies, and you telling me, Cody, once they go on the road, they're just going to have multiple winning series back-to-back-to-back.
What's the lowest they can go, and you still think they're making the postseason in the stretch?
To make
the 8-12?
So, yeah.
9-11?
To make the postseason, I think they have to win seven of these at least.
Okay. Because they do still have a 3.5 game.
Correct. Lead. Now, to win the division, I think they need a winning 20-game stretch, don't you agree? Especially when most of those,
yes,
there's Guardians games.
I think they're
going
to be 12-8 or better.
To win the division. But to make the playoffs, I think they could have a disappointing 7 or 8 game out of the 20. And people would be down, no doubt. But I don't think it would bury them. Like, that's silly. I mean, 20 game, they're not getting buried in this 20-game stretch unless it's a disaster. And a disaster is if they win fewer than 7 or 8.
Like, it made me go look at the Red Sox score because I'm like, well, let's go at least look at their schedule. Diamondbacks, salty team. Blue Jays stink. They have 5 games against the Blue Jays this week. Do the Boston Red Sox. Then the Tigers, who stink. Then the Mets, who stink. Then the White Sox, who stink. And then the Orioles and Yankees and everybody else. They'll get their turn, the Red Sox. So even if the Red Sox did get ahead of, let's say, the Royals over this 20-game stretch, well, then they got to face the Orioles and the Yankees and the Twins. So, like, it's not like they're going to get off easy at the end of the season.
It's also where the losses come from. So, like, if I tell you, Cody, that they only win 8 of these 20, but
5 are against the Guardians.
Well, then you're, okay.
Then they're in the division.
So some of it, there'll be some more nuance to it as we get in. I mentioned to have a 12-8 record in the 20. To me, they have to win this series against the Phillies. But I guess if you're going to have a bad series, have it against the Phillies, they're a National League team, and have much more success, against the Yankees and the Guardians. The Guardians are the most important team they play, we know, with the 7 games that they have or whatever it is the rest of the way.
Those Twins games don't not matter.
No. But
those two teams,
I still think the Twins... will do damage to themselves the rest of the way enough. The Guardians, to me, you're going to have to land the punch yourself, if that makes sense.
Sure. You're going to have to knock them out. Yeah. You're the challenger. The Twins could just fall off like you're falling off. But, yeah, you're the challenger in the fight. You're the underdog. They're not Floyd Mayweather, but they're, you know, they're the heavyweight champ, and you're trying to take their title away. In going through everyone's schedule, though, that's the thing. Nobody has it all that easy for the same reasons we talk about with, like, Drew's Cincinnati Bengals in the AFC North. Anybody who's fighting for these playoff spots right now all have to face each other because Yankees and Baltimore in a division together have each other multiple times. Twins, Royals, and Guardians all are just going to recycle playing each other over the next 3 weeks. So, like, nobody has that easy of a schedule. The Royals does look particularly daunting over the next 20 games, but I don't think anyone has it easy for the remaining 5 weeks of the season either. I'm thinking 10-10. 10-10, and I think you're, like, at the end of that stretch, if they're 10-10, I'm going to call them a lock for a playoff spot at that point because they would still probably hold a multiple game edge on there, and they would have gotten through the worst of it. They would have weathered the storm because if they go 12-8, I might be – I mean, they go 13-7, I might be calling for the World Series win. They might be the number one team in the American League when that's done.
That's the flip that could happen, you know. If well, because of the way the records are out, if they win the division, I don't care what the stretch is, but if they win the division – then of course they have a chance because we to get to a World Series. If they win the division, they would have either the best record in baseball or probably the second best. If that's the case,
correct?
Because nobody's winning 100 games. We've gone over this multiple times the last week. Like, if you win the AL Central, you're probably winning 93 games. I think 92 for sure.
Yeah,
you're in that 92 to 95 win range. You do that, you're going to have one of the top two records, three records in baseball. So yeah, of course, at that point, I would say that. But that's how big the stretch is. It can change the narrative completely, other than just the actual standings that exist. And hopefully, we were talking crowd size yesterday, hopefully tonight and tomorrow and Sunday. I know Sunday is going to be pretty warm in Kansas City, but hopefully 30,000 plus each and every night this weekend to support the boys in blue who are right in the thick of this thing, man. Right in the thick of this thing as it's August the 23rd. Preseason football is over, all right? The regular season for football starts in 13 days, and right now the Royals are about to be in the middle of a 20-game stretch that could ultimately decide if they make the postseason or not. I mean, that's pretty exciting that we finally have that here.
In all the time in Kansas City's history, there's very few times when they line up. The Chiefs were a playoff team when the Royals were going through their run in 14 and 15. They were like a mid-tier playoff team. So that's as close as we got, which let's just say the Royals are a mid-tier playoff team and the Chiefs are at the absolute pinnacle of the universe. Well, then we're kind of in the same range. But the biggest difference between then and now is the Royals were doing it, as Cody Decker, I think, pointed out earlier. Really good team. Wasn't, like, lathered with future Hall of Famers and the best players in the sport. It was everyone was really good, and they had a million likable players, and we loved Kane and Hosmer and Salvi, who might be the one Hall of Famer, who, you know, maybe Shields, whatever, right? Wasn't, like, littered with it. And then now it's they have the best player in football, and they have arguably the first, second, or third. I don't care. Like, no one's going to argue top three in the country, so I guess I'll make that argument. They have one of the best players in the entire sport.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll talk some more Royals baseball, diving deeper into the division specifically. The seven games coming up against Cleveland, now just two games back. That's right, two games back in the division after the Guardians lost yesterday to the New York Yankees. So an off day for the Royals that was a very productive off day. But yesterday was the final preseason game. You heard the game right here on 96.5. The Fan, as preseason is in the books. Cut down day coming up on Tuesday afternoon, August 27th. Now that preseason is over, what player do you think actually had the best preseason and maybe has you most excited heading into the season?
Because the Jackson's going to fill up with Carson's
team. Maybe those are two different questions. Maybe that's, you know, who had the best preseason and who has you most excited might actually be two different answers. Because if I'm being honest, the player that has you most excited, I fully expect everybody to say Carson
Steele. It's
Cracky
Jay, man. Yeah, come on. Let's not kid ourselves here.
It's Carson Steele from an excitement standpoint. Came out of nowhere, undrafted player that now is going to have some sort of role. To what degree, we're going to find out. We can debate that. He's the most exciting player out of preseason.
Stiff-armed someone into a different universe yesterday.
Right. It was a very impressive run. I still told you I want to see him in the regular season when he's going up against number ones that can actually tackle. But he's obviously found himself a role on this football team. So he's the most exciting player out of preseason. The player that had the best preseason, I think, was Jaden Hicks, though. I know it's not as sexy because you're not running the football and scoring touchdowns, but
shows up
every single preseason game, he was standing out. special teams, on defense. You didn't have to look hard to find Jaden Hicks on the football field. Other players sometimes, like, you're searching to see what X player is doing. Jaden Hicks is just there. He flashes on the screen every single preseason game, and last night was definitely the case as well.
He appears to be the next in a long line of safeties taken in the third or fourth round or later who seem to just do great things for the Chiefs, and they'll just keep their cycle going. It'll be Cook and Connor this year, and then one of those guys will be gone. Justin Reed will be gone, and then insert Jaden Hicks, and they'll draft some other guy a couple of years later, and then it'll be him rotating in. So I do not disagree with the idea that Jaden Hicks has been one of the most impressive players for the Chiefs the entire preseason. But I didn't even know who Carson Steele was 8 weeks ago.
Right.
He was an undrafted, free agent, rookie running back who I was unfamiliar with because I didn't watch a lot of UCLA football, and I watched a lot of Ball State. Is that where he played before that?
Yes,
I watched zero Ball State.
Drew watched a ton.
Before that, I wasn't watching action on Wednesday night.
See?
But if you go back through and you actually look at his college stats, this is exactly how you find running backs in the NFL. He had like 4,000 all-purpose yards in his college career, and you're like, oh, well, then why the hell wasn't he drafted? It's like, 'cause it's running back, and no one can evaluate where the best of them are. You can find running backs from anywhere. 2 months ago, I didn't know who he was, and right now I would happily tell you, and I think confidently tell you, he is the second-best running back on this roster and deserves to be running back two on this roster moving forward. That doesn't mean they can't hedge a bet, have a veteran, play a safety net. But right now, Carson Steele has earned the second job on this team.
Yeah, well, also, Clyde has helped him earn that second job.
Yeah, he has, by not being available.
It's not Clyde's fault. We know the situation there, I mean, and what he's going through. But football season is around the corner, and there's the reality of making a roster or not. I tweeted last night, and you know, some people agreed, obviously some people didn't, but Clyde needs to either be cut or needs to be put on the non-football entry list. One way or the other, something has to happen by Tuesday. You cannot go into the season and just say, yep, he's our number two running back and he's just not available and we do this all year. That's just not how you can go into a season, in my opinion. So they either have to make the really, really difficult decision to cut Clyde, considering everything,
or
NFI him and see where things are at as the season goes on. But Carson Steele, right now, of course he's the number two back because he's available. He's playing. I didn't count. Clyde practiced more than seven times during training camp. He played in none of the preseason games. He had like seven practices, and I understand the circumstances of why. I'm just saying there's the football side that still happens, and that has to be accounted for, and that's the problem. But when you look at what Carson Steele has done, it makes you feel better, definitely, about the situation. If Carson Steele had not emerged, then what would we be saying about the backup running back spot?
Oh, I'd be real concerned.
I still think that
desperately concerned.
If they put Clyde on, like, the NFI list, they can go into the season with Carson Steele. We'll see what their decision is for Denaric Prince. But I still would like them to bring in a veteran. I'm not even saying that veteran has to be running back two over Carson Steele, because Carson Steele is going to have a role on this team and special teams, too. That's where he's been really impressive on top of it. But a veteran is someone I would still like to be behind Isaiah Pacheco, whether it's the third running back or the second.
I've got another one for you. It's, I don't know if he necessarily had even the best one or the most exciting. It's the least sexy pick, I guess, for this. But I think Kingsley was really solid and really good just because of the conversation in the battle at left tackle, guys. And I know that there's going to be some ups and downs, but it wasn't like he played and it was, man, there's some things that he did really good, but things that he did really bad. I mean, he looked really good over the course of preseason, and I think he's only going to get better. So that it's not the sexy pick. It's not one that you look at and say, man, this guy really stood out. But the one play in particular against the Lions where they had the screen and he got outside and looked like a freaking defensive end almost running. You know, he's got the agility. He's got the speed to get out and block. I think that he's going to be very, very good, and I think he had a solid preseason.
Those are probably the three. I mean, I'm not saying other players didn't stand up, but, like, problem is, Kadarius Toney's still lining up wrong. Justin Ross lined up wrong last night. So, like, every time we spend this time on sixth and seventh wide receivers, I'm like, they can't even do the regular parts of the job sometimes.
You said it right there. We're sixth or seventh on the depth chart. There's only so much you can talk about. The reason why we talk about it a little bit more this year is because Kadarius Toney could end up actually being cut, and I still think he's getting cut. I told you I wanted him to go out there and have seven catches, a buck 50, and three touchdowns. Would have been great. That way they could have got a
he
conditional
was one fingertip
pick
from Colbert away from having that.
I'm telling
just
you,
so you know. He was dangerously close to that.
When they were in the red zone and he already had those two catches, like, man, if they score a touchdown here and it's Kadarius Toney, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Inches away from, like, a 70-yard touchdown from Oladokun.
I think Sky's for sure making the team. He didn't even play, guys.
Yeah, he's on.
Probably,
so does that
yeah.
mean McColl's on the edge?
McColl played a lot.
We had McColl penciled in.
We
McColl
did.
Played. Sky didn't.
Here, yeah, he would be a surprise still, but I'm trying to think of the special teams value. We know Worthy's not going to return punts because Hollywood Brown's hurt. They want to preserve him. So
sure.
McColl Hartman's next man up. But if Dave Tobe loves Nico Remigio so much and he could be a returner, is that the trade-off? I would still right now, if we were betting on who makes the team, I would still bet that McColl Hartman is on the team. But it was a little interesting. He was playing as much as he did. I wonder if it's just a numbers game. At some point, like, somebody has to suit up still. You know what I mean? Like, somebody still has to suit up last night. I know there's 90-something
sure.
guys on the roster, but, like, you know, they had
But why not
every
Sky?
Starter.
Sky should be earning his spot
well,
even more
in
than
their
McColl.
Mind, in their mind, maybe they know they have their answers on him.
I think you're probably right. Sky's probably on the team. I mean, I didn't see anything last night that I think Nico Remigio's not going to make it again. And I just, like, it's...
I don't know, man. That's the challenge. We think they're keeping seven receivers?
I still think they're keeping
so,
seven.
So, okay, we'll go through like we all have. We know Rashee Rice and Hollywood Brown and Xavier Worthy and Justin Watson. There's four. We used to include McColl, and that's five. And then we were saying, okay, well, then there's two spots remaining. And so you're talking about Sky Moore, Justin Ross, and Nico Remigio for six and seven spots. So three guys for two spots. And I still think Justin Ross is a practice squad guy. I think ultimately he gets cut, and then they think they can sneak him through to the practice squad. And I don't believe they could do that with Sky.
And they keep Sky and Remigio then?
In that scenario. Yeah. In that scenario, yes.
And McColl then, I guess, too.
Well, McColl's the fifth still
yes,
in my mind.
Right.
Yeah. It sounds like you've switched, Cody, where you think McColl's out. So then who's 5, 6, 7?
I'm not ruling. Okay. I'm just asking if we need to. I wouldn't. It wouldn't make much sense.
No, someone's right. Sky had the one. He was in a uniform. He had one kickoff return. Sorry.
Oh, that's right.
That was it. He had one kickoff return.
McColl, this guy has to make it. And when you just compare to what he's done production wise the last two seasons to the other people that are in the conversation, McColl's got to. He has to make it, right?
He has to. Like the only one I care about is Tony not making it. So if it's anyone outside of that, I'm fine.
Yeah, I mean, if they come McColl Hartman to keep Tony, that's just foolish.
Like, what are we doing here?
That's foolish.
You know, halfway through the year when McColl signs with, like, some other team, you're going to have to trade for him again, cut somebody different, and do this all over
someone
again.
Else said, what about Cornell Powell? He's had a couple scores. Cornell's looked good. I actually think Cornell Powell's going to get cut, but some other team's going to pick him up this go-round. In the past, he's made it through to the practice squad. I think Cornell Powell has shown enough for another team where perhaps he gets picked up from somebody else, but doesn't make the Chiefs practice squad.
Yeah, that's probably right. Cornell Powell, again, they're really good on depth 5 through 11 wide receiver, right? There's a lot of guys who run kind of a similar amount of talent scale, but I'm not going
to
sweat about that.
Yeah, we're so
Carson Steele, Jaden Hicks, Kingsley Suamataia, I would say that those are the ones that stood out. The only concerning thing is not a single defensive lineman listed in that group, so we'll see on that.
We'll talk more about that coming up in the 11 o'clock hour here as we continue broadcasting from Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Ultimate contest weekend, Circa Million, $6 million guaranteed. You pick 5 games against the spread every week, and Circa Survivor, $10 million guaranteed, where you choose a different winning team each week. Circa Sports here in Las Vegas. You can sign up before Saturday, September the 7th. Up next, we're going to talk some more Royals baseball, though. What does it actually take to win the division, plus the state of the Chiefs with 13 days to go till the start of the season?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Northsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.